Many of us know that June is National Pride Month, and that's the time of the year we tend to associate with LGBTQ-related events, including Pride festivals and associated activities. What you may not know is October 11th is National Coming Out Day, and there are some towns and counties around central and eastern Kentucky joining in, especially this year. Is your town one of them? We're interested in your questions, comments, or personal stories. Write to us by email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at WEKUEST. Post on Facebook or the WEKU website. In just a little while, we'll open the phones as well. It's time for Eastern Standard and our discussion of small town pride right after the news from NPR. From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard. Hello, I'm John Hingsbergen. Small towns have not always been welcoming to the LGBTQ community. This year, Moorhead, Georgetown, Frankfort, and some other communities in Kentucky, folks in those communities are making efforts to change that. They are hosting Pride events in this town, in these towns, this October due to National Coming Out Day, or a connection to National Coming Out Day on October the 11th. They're trying to show support and spread awareness regarding LGBTQ issues, as well as creating an inclusive community. I am here in the studio with two guests, and we have another guest on the line on Skype. I'm not sure if you all can hear the echo that I'm hearing on the air, but maybe be created by the Skype connection. But on the Skype, let me introduce Dr. Patricia Minter, professor of history at Western Kentucky University, a founding member of Bowling Green Fairness, member of the board of directors of the ACLU of Kentucky, and formerly served as faculty regent on the WKU Board of Regents. Dr. Patricia Minter, can you hear me okay?
I can. Thank you.
Excellent. We can hear you well as well. Thank you so much for being part of our program and joining us via Skype. I also want to welcome to our studio Jesse Rubel. Jesse is a facilitator for PFLAG Frankfort. PFLAG, Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays, I know is the traditional terminology for PFLAG. And Jesse also associated with the Capital Pride event, PFLAG serving as a co-sponsor of the first ever Capital Pride. Jesse Rubel, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Also with us, Harold Dean Jesse, or goes by Dean. Dean, thank you so much for being with us. Dean is from Georgetown, and do you have a title besides a host of the Georgetown Pride?
Just a organizer for upcoming Georgetown Pride.
Let's talk a little bit about Georgetown Pride. Let me pick that up, and then we'll get to our other guests. But Dean, this is the first time, I guess it's the first time you're doing this event at your own home?
Yes, we're doing it at our residency because we live on at 601 East Main Street, and it's a very public space. We're very visible. The Fairness event last year was held at a small city park on a side street. And we just decided it needed to be more public exposure where everyone can see that, yes, it's okay to be in the LGBT community in Georgetown, Kentucky, and you can show yourself.
I understand last year's Georgetown Pride event was a relatively small event. I guess this year's will be relatively small as well. How many people showed up last year?
Well, there was approximately about 200 people.
Oh, really? Okay.
And we're anticipating at least 300 or more this
year. And they're all going to be in your yard.
Yes. We're fortunate to have a very large yard, yes.
And that, again, for this Georgetown Pride event is when?
It's October the 28th from 11 to 3 at 601 East Main Street. It's the second house when you come into town. You can't miss this. It's the White House with red trim.
All right. Excellent. Georgetown Pride, October 28th. Let's go ahead and talk to Jesse Rubel about the Frankfort event, Capital Pride, the first time for Capital Pride. Kentucky's state capital of Frankfort has never hosted such an event. Tell me about that. Tell me how that came about.
That's correct. It is our first Pride event. It is going to be on October the 14th from 11 a.m. until 3:30 in the afternoon, and it's going to be on the old Capitol lawn on Broadway, which is the center of downtown.
Now, tell me how this happens when you organize a Pride event in a city such as Frankfurt. Is there a city permit involved, or is there interaction with the city or county government in order to make this happen?
Well, there's not really a permit required from the local government. Now, we did have to work with historical properties at the state level to reserve and acquire the old Capitol lawn.
Because it's a historic site.
Correct.
Okay. And the same, Dean, regarding the event in Georgetown, you're holding this on private property, but do you need to have a permit, or is this a licensed or somehow a sanctioned event in the town?
We didn't actually have to have a permit, but we did go visit the city officials and tell them the event was happening. And then we also informed local law enforcement since it was going to be on Main Street. But other than that, no, it's at a private location, so we informed so people would be aware of the traffic situation and all the people there.
I want to get to Dr. Patricia Minter in just a second here, but just what kind of reaction have you all had from the local government, your local communities, law enforcement, or others in the community? Again, in Georgetown, was there a reaction to the first Pride event in the town last year?
It was very positive. We did not have a single issue happen. We are very fortunate that our local mayor had been very cooperative and helpful in making sure that when we had the event at a city park that we felt welcomed and we felt safe, and there were zero problems. And no one has really actively worked against us at this point, and we're very appreciative of that.
Let's go to Dr. Patricia Minter. I understand you go by Patty Minter, professor of history at Western Kentucky University. She joins us by Skype. She's at a member of Bowling Green Fairness, a founding member, and a member of the board of directors of the ACLU of Kentucky. Patty Minter, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm excited to talk about our inaugural Bowling Green Pride Festival.
And yeah, and I also, you know, because of your involvements in Bowling Green Fairness and the ACLU, we certainly want to talk with you maybe about some of the other wider issues. But yeah, tell us more about what's going on in terms of Pride in Bowling Green.
Well, Bowling Green is hosting our Bowling Green Fairness, which is a movement associated with the Fairness Campaign. We're hosting our inaugural Bowling Green Pride Festival, which is going to be on Saturday, October 21st from 12 to 5. We're on Central Time, by the way, 12 to 5 Central Time in Circus Square Park, which is our biggest downtown park area, and it's where festivals are held. WKU's Homecoming Rally will be held there, for example. There was a big international festival there last weekend. So it's a very big, very beautiful public space, centrally located in our historic downtown. And we're very excited to host bands and drag performances, vendors and nonprofits. And we'll have a march to City Hall when it's over to talk, you know, give our supporters a chance to rally in support of the Fairness Ordinance, which is also a big part of why we're having this inaugural Pride Festival.
So this is part of an effort to encourage Bowling Green government to enact a Fairness Ordinance?
Absolutely. The Pride Festival in Bowling Green has three purposes, one of which is to build community support and to show community support for enacting a fairness ordinance. Bowling Green is currently the largest city in Kentucky without fairness protections for the LGBTQ community. And certainly we want to change that, and we think the public support is there to change that. We now need to convince three people or two more people on our city commission. We already have one very supportive commissioner who's working with us. But we're really emphasizing three themes in our Pride Festival. We're emphasizing pride, the LGBTQ and ally community emphasizing pride. We're emphasizing hope, but we're also emphasizing resistance to homophobia, resistance to discrimination, and through this public celebration of the community, showing how strong we are, how strong our ally community is, and how it's past time for Bowling Green to have a fairness ordinance. We're going to have a great time doing it.
Patty Minter, you mentioned, did I hear you correctly? You said this is the 9-year-old Pride event in Bowling Green?
No, it's the inaugural. I'm sorry.
Glad I clarified
yeah.
that. So first time ever.
There have been small, more private events in the past, usually evening shows. But this is the first time we've had a large public Pride Festival, and the community support and excitement is really amazing. It's something that obviously Bowling Green is ready for, and we've been ready for a long time.
That's one of the reasons for us deciding to do this program today, the fact that we were hearing about Pride events in places like, we certainly had heard of Georgetown last year. We're hearing about Moorhead. They also had a Pride event last year. Hearing about Frankfurt and yours being the very first. What's happening? Why are these Pride events cropping up in, and I apologize for calling these small towns, but cropping up in communities aside from Louisville and Lexington? Louisville, I guess, has a couple of major Pride events every year. Lexington has a very large Pride celebration. But why is this happening in the smaller communities?
Well, I can speak for what's happening in Georgetown. We were very close to passing a fairness ordinance in Georgetown. And as a result of being a part of that process and seeing the good and bad of that, and we had multiple supporters within our city council in passing this ordinance, but it took just one person to torpedo that progress on the council. So we see this as that avenue to keep the pressure up that the LGBT community is not going to go away in Georgetown. We're going to continue to fight until this fairness ordinance is passed. And a part of that growth is moving on to the next step, which is actually a formal Georgetown Pride organization. And we're going to focus in on 21st century economy, where Georgetown's leading the state economically, where we have had all these people moving to Georgetown, all these companies, but yet we're running our city in a very backwards way, and that's one of the ways we're going to approach it.
So you are organizing in a formal fashion, a formal nonprofit organization for Georgetown Pride?
Yes, at this Pride event on October the 28th, was kind of combined with Pride and Fairness, we're going to actually start naming the organizers who are behind it publicly in the fact of moving forward, because we do not want some of the city council members to think that this is going away. You know, we are very active in the community. We have an important role to play. And there's going to be some accountability, because in Georgetown, you cannot claim that you're a 21st century economy. You want to be the fastest growing city, and you are the fastest growing city. You cannot have it both ways. From what we can see, there's a clash of the past and the present. And we want to make sure that Georgetown moves forward in the present and not stuck in the past.
Dean Jesse from Georgetown is here with us. Jesse Rubel from Frankfurt is with us. And on Skype, Dr. Patricia Minter. This is Eastern Standard. Our program is an interactive show, so we want to get our listeners involved in the conversation. What do you think about this movement to establish Pride events in some communities that have never hosted them before? Looks like every weekend for the rest of the month of October, there's going to be something going on in Kentucky. Our phone number, 800-621-8890. Please jump on board with your questions, comments, or personal stories. Send us an email if you choose to do so, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. You can send a tweet at wekuest. Again, the email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com, or call 800-621-8890. Small town or hometown pride on this week's Eastern Standard.
First things first, I'm a blue-collar man with scars on my knuckles, dust on my hands. Probably wouldn't have ever known I've got a man waiting on me at home.
Berea-based singer-songwriter Sam Gleaves bumps us back on this week's program, Eastern Standard, as we're talking about a small town, or we might want to call it hometown pride on this week's program. LGBTQ events happening in the month of October. Kind of a unique situation, some things cropping up that hadn't existed so far in Kentucky. And we're interested in your comments about that, your questions, your personal stories about Pride, or your belief about such events. Do we need Pride events in these towns in Kentucky? 800-621-8890. Write to us by email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. On the Skype, we have Patricia Minter, professor of history at Western Kentucky University. We have Dean Jesse with us from Georgetown. And we also have with us Jesse Rubel of Frankfurt, and Jesse behind, involved with organizing the first ever Capital Prize. So, Jesse, how did that happen in Frankfurt? Just your idea, and all of a sudden, you know, you decided to organize an event?
Well, the Pride gets its start from the Fairness Ordinance that was passed in 2013, I believe. I'm involved with a peer support group called PFLAG, and I'd been involved with that group for about 5 years out of Lexington. And after the Fairness Ordinance passed, I was asked by other Frankfurt natives to consider opening or starting a support group in the Frankfurt community. And it just so happens that I live in Franklin County. So we started a chapter there, and along with the Fairness Campaign we work closely with, we decided it was time for Frankfurt to move into the future, and we formed a committee and decided to get that ball rolling and got the first Pride.
What kind of reaction have you had in the community? I mean, has there been any pushback? Anybody saying, wow, we don't need one of those? I mean, Lexington's only, you know, 20 minutes away.
There has not been any resistance or any negative comments publicly as of yet. Like other prides, we will not be surprised that there could be some picketing and protesting at the event. I don't think it's going to be anything significant, but we do anticipate that as a possibility.
Let me turn again to Dr. Patricia Minter at Western Kentucky University. So this is the first ever, the inaugural Pride event for Bowling Green. What's been happening in the past in terms of LGBTQ-oriented or Pride events in the community? Has there been anything going on in the past, or folks have been going to Nashville or somewhere to participate in Pride events?
That's exactly what people have been doing. They've been going to Nashville, to Louisville, to Lexington, out of state. And, you know, the fairness movement in Bowling Green really began in 1999 when Louisville and Lexington enacted their fairness ordinances. I wrote my first letter on behalf of a fairness ordinance in Bowling Green in 1999. That was 18 years ago. And we have reinvigorated the movement since 2012 to start pushing for this ordinance that's long overdue in Kentucky's third largest city. We are a grassroots movement associated with the Fairness Campaign. Bowling Green Fairness is co-hosting this event with Fairness Campaign. Grassroots movement, it is a, you know, we are not a group that has a board. This is literally a consensus-based planning effort and a festival that's really going to reflect the beauty and diversity of our community. But we have we pushed this year for a fairness ordinance. We've been sitting in at City Commission as a nonviolent direct action movement for the last 22 months, having speakers at almost every City Commission meeting to talk about their lived experiences or to tell their stories about why Bowling Green needs to have anti-discrimination protections. And we had a commissioner, a newly elected city commissioner, in February of this year who introduced the fairness ordinance for the first time. It did not get a second, so we were not able to have a discussion, but we had a huge rally at City Hall in the wake of that. Almost 400 people were at that rally expressing their outrage that we weren't even allowed to have discussion on the floor because there was no second. We had 52 speakers who spoke at a special working session of City Commission to listen about the fairness ordinance in March, although there was no formal action. So this festival was born out of the idea that we need to show how strong support for fairness is in the Bowling Green community. The LGBTQ community needs this protection desperately. We have a large ally community, and we know that Bowling Green is a place of fairness. So we are showing through this festival that it's past time for us to have this have this ordinance, but it's also past time for the LGBTQ community to celebrate its pride, to celebrate its hope for a non-discriminatory future in Bowling Green, and just to show how beautiful the community really is. There is so much anticipation for this event, and I think it's going to be a spectacular day.
This is Eastern Standard, and our show is an interactive show. We encourage you to get on board with a question, a comment, or even a personal story at 800-621-8890, or send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. We'd be glad to have a tweet from you at WEKUEST. That phone number again, 800-621-8890. Our guests, Patricia Minter, Dean Jesse, and Jesse Rubel. Folks, we're about 2.5 years past the Supreme Court decision that authorized same-sex marriage all across the United States. Why do we need to continue to push for fairness? Why do we need to continue with Pride events? Wasn't that kind of like the summit of all accomplishments for the LGBTQ community in the U.S.?
Wouldn't it be great if we could actually say that was it? We would hope that it is, but in the state of Kentucky, you have to remember, was not that long ago in Moorhead, Kentucky, where we had an elected official that even refused to issue wedding licenses for people once the Supreme Court have ruled. So even though the Supreme Court has ruled on a lot of several things that have helped the LGBTQ community, the fight goes on. And as a minority in a Southern small state, really. This Kentucky is not a very large state. There are still issues out there. And I am blessed that I work for an employer that several years ago, which we have a pride with the company I'm an executive with, we were encouraged to take part and help our communities. And when the Fairness Organization, which I'm a member of the statewide Fairness Group, I was approached by a local group of people about what was happening in Georgetown. And readily said yes when they asked for my help, because they knew politically I knew a lot of the folks in Georgetown and wanted to move this forward. But when I attended what happened in Moorhead and saw how the ugliness, it was just pure ugliness what I witnessed there, and then the ugliness that I saw in Georgetown at the city council hearing, it was hard to sit there and take what people were saying against the LGBTQ community. And then at the very end, the hardest part was I realized right then why it was so important that we continue on with the work. The people that were suffering the most in Georgetown are recent college graduates, young adults, and also high school students. And they shared stories, and some of them were very afraid, and how they were being treated, and also how they don't feel like they can be accepted, and even in places where they work, places where they want to live, even in places where they want to do commerce with. So then I know this is not over with. We still have a lot of work to do. And Georgetown is a good place, but we need to change some things in Georgetown so it becomes a 21st century town that it should be.
That's absolutely right. I mean, we see the same thing in Bowling Green. You know, I participated in the rally on the day that the marriage equality decision was handed down in June of 2015. But one of the messages that we made very clear at the time is that this is a major battle won, but it's not even close to over. You can get married on Saturday and you can be fired on Monday. You can be evicted from your home, from your apartment, or someone can refuse to sell you a home on Monday. And one of the things we've been doing in Bowling Green is educating people who seem to think it's all over with the marriage equality decision. Marriage equality might be over, and I certainly hope that's settled law. But we see that, you know, many people have been victimized by backlash. There are plenty of people who are not protected, who are very frightened, who share their stories through the fairness movement. Many of the stories we share on behalf of others who fear losing their jobs or fear eviction from their apartments on the basis of who they are and who they love. And that's certainly not okay. So we have a major community education effort to let people know that we don't have those protections for employment, for public accommodations, and we need to continue to push for those. And that, you know, Kentucky cannot be a 21st century climate for business or a place that is attractive to people from around the country unless we have those protections. We have a lot of major corporations that do business in Bowling Green that have those protections, but one of the things that we've been telling our city commission is that you can't really expect multinational corporations to locate top executives into our city if they fear being discriminated against for who they are. So it's past time for Kentucky to get to the point where other places have been in the 21st century. Well, Patricia, and we still don't have a statewide fairness law, nor do we have a national non-discrimination law. So until then, these local fairness ordinances play an extremely important role in guaranteeing that there is equality and human dignity for all people.
Patty Minter, Dr. Patricia Minter at Western Kentucky University, you made a comment about we hope that marriage equality is settled law. But can we talk a little bit about the current political environment and the current situation in the U.S.? Again, following the Supreme Court decision in 2015, we had a very contentious election in 2016, and I don't think LGBT issues were at the forefront of that entire election discussion, but a lot of concerns in the LGBT community and others working for what we might call progressive causes. Do we see any challenges? Do we see any concerns to the current status recognition of same-sex marriage in the U.S.? Are there challenges out there? And Patty Minter, I know you're on the board of the ACLU of Kentucky. What do you see as concerns in that area?
There's not a challenge currently, but one of the things that the founder of the American Civil Liberties Union, Roger Baldwin, said early on was, no battle stays won. And I think one of the things that any group that occupies a marginalized space needs to be aware of is that no battle stays won. And nobody gets to check out of the discussion once the struggle seems to be over. So anything that's a Supreme Court decision can always be reversed by a later Supreme Court. And, you know, sometimes we want things to be reversed if we don't like them, but we want things to stay as settled law if we do like them. So I think those are things that we have to be constantly vigilant about. And what we see this term is actually it's a national ACLU case involving a cake shop in Denver that refused to serve a same-sex couple who wanted to use that cake maker for their weddings. And you know, I think this is a very important case that's going to be argued this term that will tell us a lot about what the climate is going to be in the U.S. going forward. And again, I think all of these things, to take it down to the local level, speak to the need for us to continue the work in these local fairness movements to enact laws that protect our folks locally in employment and in public accommodations and in housing. Until the political climate changes nationally, which it's going to be a while, I'm afraid, and until we have supportive legislators in both houses in Kentucky, it's going to be down to the local level in order to protect the members of the LGBTQ community. I think that's why having this Pride Month is so incredibly important for Kentucky.
I'm wondering if there are some stories or some issues out there right now, some cases where there have been discrimination that you all would use as examples of why we need a statewide fairness ordinance, why local communities need fairness ordinance. I guess in Kentucky, what is it, something like 7 communities actually have some form of a fairness ordinance in place. But are there relatively recent cases of discrimination that point to the need for such ordinances?
I would just give one locally in Georgetown that was shared at the fairness hearing. And it involves around a member of the LGBTQ community that unfortunately took her own life. And when her mother testified about her life and what happened to her in our city, she shared that she faced a lifetime of harassment. And it's very difficult to talk about because no place in America should a person feel so devalued that they take their own life. And this was very recent. This has not been a long time ago, and it's very difficult to talk about. I have met this lady's mother. She's been in my home, and my heart continuously goes out with her. And I feel like that as a community, we failed her. And I wonder if things could have been different if we had a process in place where if you had an issue with housing, that, you know, we had a place we could go to help with that. We don't in Georgetown. And so, yeah, you asked if it's recent. That's real recent, and it hurts. And we have to do better in Georgetown, and we are going to do better. We are not going to stop. We are going to keep this fight. And also, one of the gentlemen that was murdered in Orlando at that club shooting was actually from Georgetown. And so, you know, it's hard not to get emotional about it, but the pain is real. And if you could have been in Moorhead and you saw what was said about our community, if you could have been in Georgetown and you saw what was said about our community, you would leave there in shock and understanding and think, wow, this is happening in Kentucky, this much hatred. It's been showed publicly without any hesitation, not being scared to express it. Yes, we have big needs in Kentucky around this issue.
Eastern. That is exactly right. And we've seen the same thing in Bowling Green. For 22 months, we've had people coming to City Commission every couple of weeks telling their stories about lived experience with discrimination. And even if people have not experienced discrimination personally, LGBTQ people live in fear that this could happen to them. And the stress of that, you know, for someone who doesn't live under that shadow of discrimination, it's just a level of stress that's very difficult to deal with. And people have told those stories. We've had members of City Commission question people when they've described their lived experiences with discrimination, being harassed at work, consulting lawyers, being told that there is no remedy, being fired from jobs and being told by lawyers that there is no remedy, which there's not. If you're discriminated against because of your sexual orientation, gender identity or expression, or even perceptions thereof, there's nothing you can do in Bowling Green or in Kentucky unless there's a fairness ordinance in place. And I think having these public hearings, having people share their lived experiences, having the big public hearings that led to rallies, have galvanized our community because many people didn't know those protections weren't there.
We're going to take a short break.
Many people just assume you can always call a lawyer.
Patty Minter, we need to take a short break. We have Dr. Patricia Minter on the line with us on Skype from Western Kentucky University. We have Jesse Rubel and Dean Jesse with us in the studios. We're interested in hearing from you. Send us a tweet, as someone has done, at WEKUEST. Send us an email, WEKUEasternstandard@gmail.com. Best of all, get on the phone and talk with us if you're able to do so. 800-621-8890. That's 800-621-8890.
I don't mean to know much more than that. Long as I've been knowing you. If two Virginia boys can fall in love, reckon that's just what we'll do.
This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. We're talking about the small town pride on this week's program, and we're interested in hearing from you, our listeners. We have with us in the studio Jesse Rubel of Frankfurt and Dean Jesse of Georgetown on Skype. We have Patricia Minter in the Bowling Green at Western Kentucky University, and we'd be glad to have you as part of the program at 800-621-8890. Your questions, your comments, your personal stories. Do we need pride in the smaller communities and communities besides Lexington and Louisville in Kentucky? Why is that necessary? Why is it not necessary? You're certainly welcome to join in if you have that opinion. But we're, again, interested in your personal stories on these matters as well. The email address, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com, Twitter at WEKUEST. Follow the program at WEKU EST, or give us a call, 800-621-8890. We had a tweet comment from a person identifying on Twitter as Soft Mask Baggins, a small transgender cowboy. And Soft Mask Baggins says, so excited about Bowling Green Pride. Thank you to at Fairness Camp for making BG and KY a more welcoming place for LGBTQ people. Thank you so much for that Twitter comment. And our Twitter handle, at WEKUEST, we'll be glad to hear from you with a direct message or a comment. The phone number again, 800-621-8890. Jesse Rubel, Dean Jesse, Patricia Minter, you were talking about the and I know Dean Jesse talking about the events around the Kim Davis resistance to issuing marriage licenses back in 2015 and the activities that occurred around all that. Has anything changed? I mean, I guess, are all counties in Kentucky now offering marriage licenses to anyone who is eligible otherwise, not otherwise married, and meet all the legal requirements, including persons of both sex, of I guess mixed couples as well as same-sex couples? Are there any restrictions or any issues anywhere in Kentucky right now stopping people from getting married?
As far as I know, there is not any. But one of the things that was mentioned earlier on your program is, how do you change Kentucky in these smaller communities? And it's through economics, and that's the route we're going. One thing that happened in Georgetown a couple of years ago, when the Governor Bevin was first elected, he came and spoke to a Chamber of Commerce event, and he spoke for about 30 seconds. It wasn't very long. And he said, keep growing. That was his message to the people of Georgetown. And part of that growing is that you now have major companies that are operating within the city limits of Georgetown. The city government, the city council has welcomed them into our community. And they have very strong policy supporting our community. But our government does not. So our argument going forward is, you cannot have it both ways. If the Georgetown City government can think going forward that they can continue on this growth spurt, that's going to become a problem, because you need to be able to say that in Georgetown, Kentucky, when it comes to housing, places of employment, public accommodations, that the LGBT community is welcomed, and it should be that way statewide. And one of the things that I just saw, that I wish I could show you a picture of, it's amazing, and this is going to be really shown many times, was recently in Florida on vacation and saw an advertising about Pride. And I won't mention the card name here. You all already know what the card name is that Kentucky is so proud of. It's getting ready to be built here. It is being built here. And here's what the tag ad says, supported by this company in Georgetown. It's a pride thing, with the picture of the new car. Huh. Well, it's a shame that it's not a pride thing in Georgetown, Kentucky. And it's going to be. Here again, we do have some support within the city government, but our city council has to catch up with the people in Georgetown.
Some critics would say that a lot of folks in the LGBTQ community are fairly well off financially, economically. Of course, as in every community, there are people of all levels. But in general, the folks of Kentucky, for instance, in 2004, the folks in Kentucky approved a constitutional amendment defining marriage as a marriage between one man and one woman. And then the U.S. Supreme Court comes along, and the courts, the federal courts, came along and reversed all of that and nullified what the voters of Kentucky already decided that they wanted for themselves. Do we have any evidence to believe that the people of Kentucky have changed their view since that 2004 constitutional amendment?
That's really hard to know. We don't want to put civil rights issues out to ballot referenda. I think what happened in 2004, when Kentucky was one of 13 states where you had those anti-same-sex marriage amendments, and they all passed, and they all passed overwhelmingly. Civil rights and rights issues generally don't do well on ballot referenda, but, you know, the idea that people's rights and basic human rights and dignity should be put out to the voters is not at all consistent with what people in civil rights and human rights movements believe should be done. Had we waited for school desegregation, for example, to be able to pass a ballot referendum, there's a chance we might still be waiting in most of the southern states. That was a litigation strategy that was, you know, became the beginning of the big push for the Black freedom struggle. And, you know, what we find is that sometimes litigation, like same-sex marriage, can change hearts and minds. But what we also know is that you also have to have grassroots movements in order to change hearts and minds. And that's what these local fairness movements are about. We're organizing people to share their stories, to come together in public space, to show that we're here and the community is going to be seen and we're going to be heard and our allies are going to be heard, and to show that we have business support. Beyond the major corporations that we've been talking about, we have over 100 local businesses in Bowling Green that have joined our Fairness Business Supporter list. And people know that they can go to those businesses and that those places support having a fairness ordinance in Bowling Green, and people know they will be treated with dignity and fairness when they patronize those places. So it's a multi-pronged strategy in a place like Kentucky. But I think we always have to be mindful that there will always be a group of people who don't believe that all people should have basic human rights. But that means we just have to work that much harder to get our point across, to convince our local lawmakers and our state lawmakers that's the case, and when appropriate, to work through the courts. But the grassroots movements have so much power to do that.
Dr. Patricia Minter of Western Kentucky University joining us by Skype. Jesse Rubel of Frankfort, we haven't heard from you in a while. Reactions to what we've been discussing about here, for instance, this issue of the people's voice versus the courts making decisions that have affected everyone in this country.
Well, I think that a lot of the discrimination is a generational thing, and in today's culture, more and more people are coming out of the closet even at younger ages. And I think what families and friends of these people coming out are finding out that the sky isn't falling, and that the love that they have for these friends and family members is more prevalent than what they might be hearing from the older generation, who is stuck in their often the religious mud, so to speak.
And Jesse, as a facilitator for PFLAG, Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays in Frankfort, is there a story behind your involvement in that? How did that come about? What motivated you to bring together folks in a PFLAG group there?
Well, specifically in Frankfort, as I had mentioned before, I was asked to do it, but my involvement in PFLAG in general was because I had come out later in life and faced family rejection, and still do somewhat to this day. So PFLAG was mentioned to me as a place to go for support, and because of my business background, I got involved on the board of the organization and just enjoyed the camaraderie and friendship and the acceptance that the group offered to me. And I wanted to do the same for others that struggle every day with these problems throughout the Commonwealth.
You know, we're calling our program today Small Town Pride, or maybe subtitling it Hometown Pride. And, of course, we do have phone lines open if you'd like to get on board, 800-621-8890. Years back, when the Pride movement was moving forward, was starting to happen following the Stonewall riots and the gay pride movements of the 60s and 70s and beyond, it was gay pride. Then it became lesbian and gay pride. Now it's LGBTQ pride. And I do understand that one of the issues right now, following the recognition of same-sex marriage, there's a lot of movement, a lot of concern about the transgender community. I've heard received a report here this morning that the online news service Vox was reporting that Attorney General Sessions this hour on this Thursday morning has rescinded protections for transgender employees. How does the LGBTQ community get along? The lesbians, the gays, the transgenders, questioning persons, bisexuals, how is the sense among various members, various components of the LGBTQ community? For instance, support for the transgender community these days. Is the transgender community right there at the core of this movement?
It's a big part of, it's a huge part of the issue. And I think what we're seeing now with Attorney General Sessions' action and the transgender military ban is anyone who occupies a marginalized space needs to realize in this current political climate that if you don't have statutory protections, meaning laws, locked up, that protect you from discrimination, then you could literally go to bed one night, wake up the next morning, and find that your rights have been taken away. I mean, this is what happened to transgender military personnel. Literally, they woke up one morning and their careers were over. So until everyone is protected, until everyone has statutory protection, then no one is free and no one is safe. So I think what we have to do as a movement is continue to get that message out and say that as long as one group is suffering from discrimination, everyone needs to work together. And this is something that a message that I think resonates with the ally community as well. Many people in the ally community belong to groups that have struggled for rights, people of color, Latinos, women, lots of people who have struggled for rights and discovered that with a single Supreme Court decision or a stroke of a pen, rights they believed they had and protections they had could go away. So again, if there's discrimination anywhere, there's discrimination everywhere. And I think going forward for the foreseeable future, possibly forever, that needs to be how the framework in which the movement moves. We have to understand that everyone's in it together. And until all of us have rights, then none of us are protected. And that's not the most comforting message, but it's a real message. But there's also so much power and so much beauty in knowing that this beloved community is here to support one another and work together toward making this the Kentucky that we know it can be, a place of fairness and a place of hope and beauty and pride.
Your statement is spot on, and the fact that suddenly in the United States over the past really 6 months, the transgender community is increasingly becoming under attack, whether it's violence. There's been multiple murders documented throughout the United States, and as the number of murders in this year from the transgender community is rapidly rising, and that's very concerning. And then you combine that with the what's going on politically in our country, it troubles me deeply. And as a family, that's what I call our group is, we're a family. Sometimes members of the GBLT, LGBTQ community, our own blood family sometimes aren't that supportive. So we have to be our own family, and we support all different parts of our family. And you're right. We have a deep fight right now that's going on within the transgender community, and I ask why now? And I think part of that is, again, the ugly truth that being a minority, the weakest link, people will go after that's the most easiest to do. So we do have to speak louder and clearer on their behalf.
We're winding down our program, and of course, we launched this program because of the awareness that there were numerous pride events cropping up in places where they hadn't happened before or haven't been happening for very long. Let's end our show kind of summarizing some of the things that are going on in the next few weeks. Let's see, October 7th, this weekend. Of course, our show repeats on Sunday evening, so those who hear this for the October 7th, that's the Moorhead Pride event happening this coming weekend. Then on the 14th, where do we go from
Frankfurt.
There? That's Frankfurt, and that's Jesse Rubel's event, the Capitol Pride.
Yes, Old Capitol Lawn from 11 to 3:30.
The Old Capitol Lawn in Frankfort. What's going to happen there?
Well, we're going to have, to make this a family-friendly event, there's going to be children's activities. We're going to have interactive art exhibits. There's going to be drag shows. There's going to be drag queen story time. There's going to be vendor tables and booths. And people are welcome to, of course, there's going to be food at the event, but you're welcome to bring a picnic lunch if you wish. And
a lot going on in just a few hours' time.
Yes.
Now, on October 21st, that's the Bowling Green Pride event, the inaugural Pride in Bowling Green. Patty Minter?
That's right. October 21st from 12 to 5 p.m. Central Time in Circus Square Park. We're going to have musicians. We're going to have family-friendly drag performers. We're going to have food. We're going to have art activities for kids and face painting. We have nonprofits and other vendors, and we're just going to have a whole lot of pride. And we'll march to City Hall at the end of the Pride Festival, have a rally there. And if anybody wants to do something fun in the evening, we are having our Pride Crawl starting at 7 p.m. LGBTQ-friendly bars and restaurants are going to have drink specials for people who are over the age of 21. And we have lots of bands. We have drag performance in the evening. It's going to be a day and a night to remember in Bowling Green.
That's
and
October,
I'm so
October
excited
21st.
About it.
And then for Georgetown.
It's on Saturday, October the 28th from 11 to 3 at our home at 601 East Main Street in downtown Georgetown. And if you've never been to a Pride event, you're really missing out on a day of fun. Live music. We also have a DJ from Atlanta. Lots of food, games, vendors, and a way to show a community.
Dean Jesse, involved with organizing and actually hosting Georgetown Pride. Jesse Rubel, who's helping to make Pride happen in the capital of the city of Frankfort, and Patricia Minter of Western Kentucky University. Thank you all for being part of our program this week on Eastern Standard. Eastern Standard is a production of the WEKU stations at Eastern Kentucky University. Our producers are Emily Hutchison, Zach Redding, and Brian Burkhart. Technical director today, Roger Duvall. A reminder, the show will be repeating on Sunday evening at 6, and a podcast will be available by Thursday afternoon. We're interested in hearing from you at any time, weku eastern standard@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for being part of Eastern Standard. I'm John Hingsbergen for WEKU.